Time now, friends, on TalkSport and Talk to turn back the clock to an era when hard challenges by hard men and some hard drinking afterwards seem to be the order of the day. When words like robust and forthright were euphemisms for the kind of physical challenges that were, in a quote attributed to Sir Bobby Robson, ruining the beautiful game one tackle at a time. And the player about whom that statement may well have been made, whose nickname was Mad Dog, and was booked in his debuts for both West Brom and Derby, brought far more to football than just his role as a much-feared midfield menace. The story of Mickey Lewis, a legend at all the clubs he's played for, but best loved and probably best remembered by Oxford United fans, is brilliantly and movingly told in a book by Leo Ackerman and Alex Irwin, both of whom played for him as captains of the Oxford University Blues, more of that anon. The book's called Mad Dog, The Mickey Lewis Story, published by Pitch. And Leo and Alex and Leo, I'm delighted to say, join us now. Let me start with you, Leo, first of all. Good morning to you, Alex, as well. Maybe we can start kind of at the end of Mickey Lewis's time, or virtually the end of his time involved with football. What are the Oxford University Blues, and how did Mickey Lewis, who I suspect didn't go to Oxford University, how did he come to be involved with you two?
Yeah, well, that's a funny part of the story. Mickey always joked about being one of the least educated men, coaching some of the most educated men in the country. But that was always tongue-in-cheek because he was sharper than most of us. The Oxford University Blues is the name given to the first team at Oxford University. Just to be clear with everyone here, that does not make us a team that really competes at the top level of university football, but it was a real honour to play for the team when we were there. And it's the name is the Blues because that's what's given to you when you win your cap against Cambridge in the varsity match every year, which is a game that goes back about 150 years. And so you get your blue and you get a blazer if you play in that game. And so it's a big part of the university. And Alex and I were captains of the team, and we played under Mickey, who coached the team for about 20 years, from roughly 2002 through to 2020. And he was one of the most successful managers in the history of the club. So that's how we played under him. And he came to us in the early 2000s after he'd hung up his boots.
And I mentioned, Alex, that he was booked on his debut for both West Brom and Derby, but he wasn't just some kind of semi-house-trained polecat, to misquote, I think, Michael Foot on Norman Tebbit from back in the day. He was a very skillful player as well, I think.
I think that's fair. I think there were quite a few people we spoke to in the course of researching the book that very much put Mickey in the category of a midfield enforcer that didn't have particularly much more to contribute to his teams. But there were a number of people who tried to offer the counter view, including one name that springs to mind is Martin Yole,
yeah.
who was a senior player at West Brom when Mickey was there, and sort of talks about this young, I think he was 16 at the time when he started training with the first team, this young 16-year-old coming into their training and just really blowing everyone away. And Martin Yole was totally convinced not only they had a sort of long-time first-teamer training with them, but also they had a full England international. And Jim Magilton as well, who obviously was a very gifted footballer, was very complimentary about how Mickey could play. But his career didn't end up hitting the heights that perhaps Martin Yole ultimately expected.
And in fact, there's some amazing names in the book, Leo, that you've it seems almost offered themselves. Certainly you were helped by the late Mickey's wife in contacting mm-hmm. these people, four by Jim Rosenthal, who's been on this show many times. And you mentioned about John Motson describing another euphemism perhaps for his forthrightness. He's certainly a ball winner, is Lewis, said John Motson. And he certainly was that, was he not?
He certainly was. But then, you know, there's also some of his teammates who came out and said, you know, he could really play. And they didn't want him to just be known as the Mad Dog or the Terrier or someone who was just known for his aggressive tackles. But we spoke to some incredible names. And just on that point, you know, Jim Rosenthal, Jim Magilton, as Alex said, we even had Martin Tyler give us some of the context for that sort of very different era in English football when Mickey was allowed to make those sorts of tackles. And it was surreal for us, you know, who you know, we didn't play football to any semi-professional or professional standard, really. But through this story, we were able to really discover, you know, Mickey's world and the amazing names that he knew. And Martin Tyler even voiced the video that we released for the launch of the book. So we felt very lucky to sort of be speaking to these amazing names like Chris Wilder and that, and seeing those names on our phone felt very surreal.
And the great thing that comes through very clearly in the book is, I mean, it was a different era for football. Maybe it's still like this, you know, mate, without me being patronised, some of the lower levels of Oxford United, of course, are now in the second tier. But the fact that he was kind of gregarious is the word that pops up quite a few times, and the fact that he liked a post-match drink, would buy, go into the supporters club and buy people a drink, Alex, and also was very friendly, for example, at one point with Mick Moore, the Oxford United groundsman. So it's like at every level at that club, people knew and liked him and respected him.
Yeah, I think one thing that really came through and that we really tried to convey in the telling of the story was Mickey was so consistent in how he treated people, really from the moment he burst into the West Brom setup through to the very end of his life, back in 2021 when he was coaching the Blues, as Leo mentioned. And I think as a result of that consistency, it really was the case that universally people had nothing but positive things to say about him. And as you say, that stretched much beyond the pitch. He really took seriously sort of what he called enjoying the occasion, which to us was much more than just kind of having a pint after a game. I think it was his appreciation that the achievements only really mattered if you marked them and if you shared them with people. And that was really what Mickey was all about. He just wanted to share the experiences that he was having with as many people as possible. And that just had an amazing impact on all the people around him, I think.
Now, we talked about what they call the glory days, like the glory years was the title of a book that we featured last week. We're going to play again, I think, on Wednesday as our interview of the week. And that was about the Milk Cup seasons for Oxford United, when Robert Maxwell was the owner, certainly somebody who gave a lot to Oxford United, but took a lot from many other people, of course. But there's also in this book that you kind of bring up the town and gown, not dichotomy, that's too much. But for example, there's one, I think it's a Christmas celebration when the players go for a kind of cowboys and Indians, Native Americans theme. But they have this booze up in a pub where C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien used to hold meetings for the Inklings. So it's like that kind of seems to be to encapsulate the kind of almost contradicting terms sometimes of being an Oxford fan and going, passing through Oxford University and leaving it with a love of Oxford United, no matter where you've come from.
Yeah, I mean that particular story is just one of many in the book where Mickey is leading a group of lads around Oxford, having the time of their life after a football match, and he loved the city. I mean, I think one thing we try and get across is that he really fell in love with Oxfordshire, and he was raising his son there with his wife Suzanne, and that's perhaps one of the reasons why he didn't chase big jobs all across the country, maybe follow Chris Wilder, is because he really loved that place. And I think he was incredibly proud to be the coach for Oxford University. And he was always, after a key moment where his wife, on the first time that Mickey coached the Blues for the varsity match, which is our game against Cambridge every single year, there's a moment where, he's just been in, professional football and he's going down, I guess, to university football, and sort of not quite understanding why the lads were so nervous the night before the game in the hotel. And Suzanne just said to him, look, this is their Champions League final. And apparently just after that, he just completely got it and always took it really, really seriously. So, yeah, he loved the city. He loved the university. And he sort of, he didn't treat us any differently to the way he treated Oxford City or Oxford United lads. And I think that's what made everyone in the city love him so much.
And he played a hard physical game. And by, I think 1996, he began retirement. He began his first retirement. He's 31 years old. But then he went back and he got involved in coaching and the youth team for the youth side total. Then he went back, I think, to play in that amazing result for Oxford United against Everton in September 1999. Tell us a bit about that, Alex, because that was a remarkable performance and by the team as a whole, but certainly by Mickey.
Yeah, it was. And I think it was one of these sort of classic cases of an injury crisis sweeping the club. And this was 2 or 3 years after he'd tried to retire the first time. Retiring quite young, as you say, he played in such a way that took its toll on his body. And I think the night before the first leg of this Worthington Cup game against Everton, he was sort of put on standby. And he in an interview we found that he'd given much later, he said he was just sure that someone else would come through. He never really thought he was going to play. Found himself involved in the first leg, and then the second leg, which was the one in which Oxford went and sort of secured this win over Everton, which was a real giant killing. I suppose it would be even now, but it was a real giant killing then. And all of the press from the time just talks about the dad's army of Oxford United, the heroes, all of them, but Mickey's performance in particular. And I think that's a testament to the type of player he was. He was just an outstanding professional, I think, and he had kept himself fit, kept himself busy and ready over that 2 or 3 year period, and probably just the sheer sort of bloody mindedness had got him through the game. And I think Everton even brought Francis Jeffers on at half time, who I imagine was a lot quicker than Mickey by that point. But yeah, Mickey had had an amazing game. So much so, in fact, that I think in the bar afterwards, he sort of suggested that he regretted perhaps hanging up his boots so early.
Now, I must say, it's not only, as I mentioned kind of in my intro, that it's a real snapshot in time of a changing time in football and the changes we're still seeing in football and living through. It's also the story of a man's life, a man who lived a very full life and was seemed to be loved by everybody whose life came in contact with his. And his death was incredibly quick and completely unexpected. I do remember hearing about it and kind of having to double-check it at the time, thinking this chap was only in his, 50s, I think, 56 when he died. And there was a minute's silence, of course, at the Kassam Stadium, as it was then on the 6th of March, in honour of him. And then there was a fantastic standing memorial game in which I think, Leo Ackerman, you turned out, did you not?
I did, yeah. Alex was somewhere else for some reason.
But, you're back in prison, Alex. That wasn't that, was it? No.
I was in America. I don't want to say I was in prison.
but it was really an amazing day. We got all the Oxford teams, Oxford City, Oxford United, a team from Mickey's era, a team from the 2010 side that got back into the Football League at Wembley, an Oxford University side, and everyone turned out. I mean, they filled a whole stand And it was, you know, it's an incredibly emotional day. But the one thing that I remember is just the noise, just the jokes and the back slapping in the changing rooms, and just everybody in that stadium. You would just hear, as you'd walk past people sharing stories of having, you know, played alongside Mickey or been in the dressing room with Mickey or having received a team talk from Mickey or just like so many strong memories. And that's what came through, as Alex said before, is that everyone, because he treated everybody the same, everybody had a special memory with him. And that day, I would say, was marked especially by the fact that his son, Zach, who was 8 years old when Mickey passed away in March 2021, that Zach came onto the pitch, actually playing for Oxford University's side, and within, I think, scored a 10-minute hat-trick. Might have even been a perfect one. And he was the hero of the day, and that was just so special. His mum was there, and that was just, couldn't have been more meaningful.
And the overall dedication of the book seems to be towards young Zach. You say, if nothing else, Zach, this book is for you. But the contributors, folks, to this book, it's called Mad Dog, the Mickey Lewis story. It's beautifully told, as Martin Tyler says on the front cover. You'll get remembrances from the likes of Ron Atkinson, Martin Joel, Jim Rosenthal, we mentioned, Des Buckingham, Chris Wilder. It's a brilliant read, folks, published by Pitch. It's our book of the week here on Talk Sport and Talk, Mad Dog, the Mickey Lewis story. And we're in conversation there with the authors, Leo Ackerman and Alex Irwin. Guys, you wrote this together. Were you working, and how did that work out? Who was in control of the typewriter or the keyboard, if you like?
We were actually never in the same place. So as I mentioned, I've been in America a lot recently, and Leo has lived in Switzerland. So it was very much a shared Google Doc, which by the end was moving very slowly because it just had so many sort of track changes and comments on it. But I think it worked, Leo. I don't know. I can't speak for you.
It's a great read, and I really appreciate it because, you know, I read a lot of books for this show, and some are, to be frank, mediocre. This one is certainly an excellent read, folks, published by Pitch. It has to be an Oxford United fan, you know, West Brom, Derby in there as well, but to enjoy this. But it's about football. And it's about a football that is kind of, for many of us, a memory, but elements of it are still very much part of the present-day game. And characters like Mickey Lewis will always be people that want to be memorialised, people in demand, and people you want to read about. The book's called Mad Dog, the Mickey Lewis story, published by Pitch, and the authors Leo Ackerman and Alex Irwin are our special guests this morning. We're live, my friends, till 5:00.